teaching some topics in Masechet Brachot. So we've looked at Brachot. That was our first topic. We had a topic on work or kolal, or both. Coexistence. And now, further down the page, really the first Amud, first daf, has so much packed into it. So I wanted to pick the next topic, which is the topic of loopholes, or ha'arama, in halacha. And
talk about the good old days.
Talk about the good old days, exactly. And with the goal to really broaden this and talk about the halachic system in general and look at what is the what are some of the underpinnings behind halacha's movement toward innovation, circumvention, and how we should think about that as time goes on and the halachic system develops in the way that it does. So this is not the only Gemara that speaks about the concept of Harama. There are many, but this does seem to give a certain frame to the conversation. So Gemara is again in Sechet Brachot Lamed Hei Amud Bet, and the reason why it comes up here, from what I remember, is. Trying to remember why they bring it up here.
Didn't we just learn about learning and, like...
Yeah.
Like, can that be the connection? Like, a loophole in order to do work or something like that?
Interesting.
It's not really about
that. I didn't necessarily think about that way. Okay, we'll leave it open a little bit just to kind of think about why it comes in the heels of the previous Gemara. I mean, the way that the previous Gemara ends is it speaks about learning for X number of months, then going to work so that the working doesn't get in the way, learning doesn't get in the way of the working, and the working doesn't get in the way of the learning. Well, this Gemara, we can throw that out as a question to think about, what the smichut parshiot is between these two Gemaras. But this is talking about the good old days, as we called it, or the Dorot Rishonim, and the Gemara says as follows: Amar Rabbi Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Lai, Bor E Shelo Kedorot Rishonim, Dorot HaAchronim. The earlier generations, come and see that the earlier generations, the later generations are unlike the earlier generations, and this may actually be the source for the term that people use today, Yeridat HaDorot. I don't know of any other source that it could come from, but this seems to be one of the...
We have other ones about, you know, not being lucky enough to deal with certain instances of, like, with Mefashot elsewhere.
Right.
And, like, you know,
right.
the Hasidim
of Rishonim.
Yeah, who used to know all the Hawaiian.
Right.
Usually Amoraim talking about that.
How, right.
So it could be a Smicha thing.
Right. Okay, interesting.
But they definitely talk about it. I can't remember the source. Yeah. Like,
no. I'm familiar with other comparisons between generations, but this seems to have a more... yeah, exactly. Dorot HaRishonim. And now what's interesting about it is it's... And I'll raise this as a question as well. It's just an interesting question to think about. Is this a critique? Or is this just a nebuch? We live in a later generation and... You know, and this is how people operate. So I'll throw that out. Let me know what you think when we get to the end of the...
I would say that is a routine.
Meaning, is it being said as low or whoa? Like, you know, almost like every generation has its own, and that's really part of the discussion about loopholes. Every generation or every time in history has its own unique challenges, and the halakhic system has to respond.
Are these legitimate changes, or are they people should start?
Okay, so that's also going to be, you know, a difference might be between actively not doing an essay versus getting around a low tase. which we'll talk about when we speak about mechira chametz and tzitzit and things like that. So let's go through the lines here. So this is a discussion on maser. The basic rules of maser are that in order for a produce season or a produce collection to be obligated in maser, there has to be a certain procedure, essentially, that is undergone, and the pile has to be put together and collected, and then the food basically has to be brought into through the entranceway of a home or a chatzer, and that kind of, it's almost like ceremonial, but that procedure is what obligates the food according to the Torah in the requirement to separate maser. So this is comparing, it's very clear what the connection is between this and the earlier Gemara, now I remember. It says it in the third line. Dorot harishonim asu toratan keva, umalachtan arai. Yeah. Zovezo nit kama biyadan. Dorot achronim shasu malachtan keva v'toratan arai. Zovezo lo nit kama biyadan. So, and again, critique or just, this is the reality, I think, is something that you could, just the way it's presented isn't necessarily lean one way or the other. The earlier generations, they made their Torah fixed, and their work was temporary or was less fixed, and they were able to accomplish both. And the later generations, who made their work fixed and their Torah temporary, neither of them were successful. They were not successful in either pursuit. And then the Gemara does next is it parallels or contrasts or creates another series of contrasts between earlier and later generations. I'll just comment, just interesting, because we spoke about this last time, the Gemara before has the Gemara clearly says, Harbe Asu Kravi Shmelva Alubi Adan, they were successful with the path of Torah in Derech Eretz, or Anheg Behem in Derech Eretz, of some kind of combination. And the few people who tried to do Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's approach failed. And we just looked at the halacha, and Shulchan Aruch sides with Rabbi Shmuel, and the Bir Halacha in that case that we looked at said that the Gemara wasn't giving a psak for everybody to follow the same psak. The Gemara was giving the options that are available to people and giving us the recommended practice based on almost like a statistic, right? Statistics of people being successful in one approach to the pursuit of Torah.
And it had that opposing source in Menachot. That's also why it was more common.
Correct. And because of Menachot, let me just finish and then I'll take a comment. But the Shulchan Aruch still says, in that context, that even if it's Torah in Malacha, the Torah still has to be Keva, and the Malacha still has to be Arai. Whatever that means, and how that works out, and what the hour differential in a person's day, I think is a discussion that has to be had. But just because we're following, the general society is following Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, it doesn't mean that Torah becomes secondary.
It'd be interesting to know a little bit more about the Bir Halacha. I think a very fair critique of any type of commentary on this issue is that, kind of by definition, the people commenting are people who have devoted their lives to Torah. There are some instances in which the commentary can't be separated from the fact that you've been a commentary, and that's something that's
interesting. Okay. Fair point.
Like it's a little bit of a far-reaching critique.
Yeah, there's okay.
Like, and especially considering, the vast majority of the rabbinic, of the rabbis throughout history have been very wealthy, and that's why they were able to study.
Right.
And it's certainly the text that survived, like the Rama, by way of analogy, right, his father owned a printing press, so, like, his books were dispersed like that, whereas, like,
Interesting. Okay.
No, nothing to say on the legitimacy of the halacha.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Torah Tan Keva Malach Tan Arai is a...
Right.
Yeah, it's saying that's already almost like a Mamar Chazal,
And there's no time in history that the Jewish people ever were like that, I don't think. Maybe the Midbar.
But they were able to do...
That the majority of the masses were Torah Tan Keva
the Vavodatan or whatever the language is.
So like a Vlachtan arrival.
That's why nowadays it's even more fascinating, because like even the concept of free time, like in a world where we have electricity and like nighttime doesn't mean things are over, like actually has a whole new interpretation of what it means. Like maybe I can have a change in careers and that can be awry, but then like Kev, I could still like learn a little bit of something every single. I don't know. It's just it's a very different reality.
And what and how you define malach also. Okay, yeah. So that's all of these are important. So that's part A, and then part B, so that kind of gives us the bridge between the previous conversation and this one, and then part B is Amar Rabbi Rochan, Rabbi Yochan, Mishum, Yehuda Bar Ilai. So it's the same series of rabbis speaking. Bar A, Shaloka Dor Rishonim, Dor Achonim, Dor Rishonim, Ayu Machnisim, Peroten, Derech Traksimon, Kedei L'Chayvan B'Maser. Traksimon is the gate, Rashi says, the Sha'arei HaChatzer, the gate of the house, the gate of the courtyard. And that was the typical way, or the appropriate way, for one to obligate oneself in maaser, in the obligation to give maaser. Dorot achronim, machnitzim peroten derech kagot, derech hatzirot, derech karpifot, kedei lepatran mina maaser. The later generations would figure out any other type of way to get the food into the house, which would, by avoiding, circumventing the entrance, classic way, which is the Torah's definition of what obligates a person to maaser. So that was the all of these different ways: going through the roof, going through the back door, going through the window, would exempt one from. So that's where it comes. Kedei lepatran. That's kind of this kind of critique language. They did it in order to exempt themselves. They exempted themselves mina maaser, but they did it in order to exempt themselves, which is more of like a negative, like the language of kedei is usually, in this context, is something more negative. Damar Abyana, Eina Tevel Mechayev V'Maser Chiyur Pnei Abayit. This is the source in the Torah that something that is untithed gains a requirement for Maser when it sees the Pnei Abayit, the entrance to the house. Shenamar Bi'arti HaKodesh Min Habayit. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Chatzer Kovat. Rabbi Yochanan extends this even to the courtyard itself. Shenamar V'Achlu Bisharecha V'Saveyu. These are psukim. The first pasuk is from, they're both from Kitavo.
It's also very interesting from a Talmud Mitzvah perspective, because technically, right, I mean, I would assume that the Talmud Mitzvah is about someone being like thankful for the food that you bring in or devoting it to God, and that would be true no matter what way you bring it. And here,
talks about that. He says that this only applies to Maser Sheni, Maser Ani, and not to Maser Rishon, which is very interesting.
Chaya Begorin, interesting. Okay.
Maser Sheni and Maser Ani are much less consecrated than Maser Rishon is.
And they're not every year.
Right.
Well, at least one of them is every year. But
exactly. Right. Maser Ani is for real, and Maser Sheni is, you know, whatever your reason for Maser Sheni is.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
Okay, good. Hara, I hadn't noticed that before. Okay, so the question becomes, and you know, now we kind of broaden it and look at some of the examples of this. I only brought a few. The question now becomes, like, how do we reconcile general, we'll talk generally for a second, and then we'll see, you know, what the difference might be in different kinds of cases. How do we reconcile, circumvention? And really, the goal, if the goal is we're supposed to try to actively do mitzvot and find ways to do mitzvot, how do we understand the many cases where we go the other direction? So let's start with a few. We'll look at tzitzit. So
okay, just a clarification for the maser, would that be counted then as a mitzvah kiyumit? Like, would that be an appropriate category name for it, or no?
Meaning in order to
do
the mitzvah.
Like, it's not applicable unless you pass through.
Well, how far do you take that? You have to go out and buy a field?
That's a good question.
Once you have a field.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question to think about.
Right, I mean, halacha, the Gemara is clear that halacha allows for it. They are potter. Like, it's not like.
Yeah.
Like, that's also interesting.
Yeah. So I think the perspective of tzitzit will be the one that kind of sheds the most light on this particular Gemara, although the language is a lot harsher. And when it comes to tzitzit, but I think the concept is applicable by both. So the Torah speaks about uritemoto. That's in source number one. and Arita Moto, the Gemara Darshans and Menachot, to be relevant, tzitzit is only obligatory on daytime clothing, right? Arita Moto has to be by the day, clothing that's daytime clothing. So if a person were to walk around in pajamas that have four corners all day, all month, all year, all life, theoretically, technically, they would not be obligated to put tzitzit on that garment. And
even nighttime garments.
Right.
Even if you wear them during the day.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, again, I think if a nighttime garment, some of this might be societal. So if a nighttime garment became, you know.
Just all they wear.
I'm just saying, there is such a thing in our society, people wearing things that people wear to bed during the day. And that if that became, you know, if that became acceptable, then perhaps the halacha would change in that case. But there were kind of objective types of clothing that they spoke about, which are mentioned here in the story. So you have the story with the malach, story with an angel, and the angel comes to a guy, Rav Katina, who was wearing a sedina, okay? And Rashi in source 3, this linen type of pajama, okay, was exempt from tzitzit. Didn't have tzitzit on it, and because it was a ksut laila, as Rashi says. Amar le, so he says to him, ketina, ketina. This is always interesting whenever you have, you know, conversations and the rabbinic title is removed from the conversation between A and B. Ketina, ketina, also the double language, which in Tanakh is usually more affectionate, and here maybe it's more now, tis tisk, you know, it's like
there's also katan,
katan, yeah, it could be in the
and
name
always
itself.
Always you have it by Akiva, Rabbi Akiva, all the time.
Yes,
like,
yes,
it's derogatory
yes,
there
yes,
as well.
Yeah,
because he
yeah,
has no
yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the Maharal has on Elazar ben Durdaya, Kamsa bar Kamsa, they say. You know, the names are meaningful beyond their, if those were the real names, anyway. So he says, Sedina Bekaita, Visarbala Besitva, okay, so you're wearing the linen in the summer, okay, and the Sarbala is a clothing that is rounded, if you look at Rashi, it only has two corners, okay, so... because only it's two corners, you're wearing that in a different season. Tzitzit shel tchelet mateela. There's different girsas here, whether that's tchelet or not. But, you know, this language of what's going to become of the tzitzit. You're never going to be doing that mitzvah. So Amar Lei, so he responded, anshitu aasei, in almost rhetorical, you're going to punish me for something that's optional, right? He's basically saying, yes, it's a mitzvah, but it's optional if I right. So he says Amar Lei. So the Malach answered Bizman deika ritcha anshinan. When there's a time of anger, you can even get punished on something that's, you know, that's a lower level, an optional type of thing. So iyam bishlama chova gavrahu. So if you tell me that the nature of the mitzvah of tzitzit is on the person, right? On the body, on the body of the person, not on the clothing. Hainu d'machayev d'lo karami. So in that case, he hasn't really done anything because he's not obligated. Ela i'amar chova talidu halo machayva. So the Gemara ends up with the conclusion that tzitzit is a chovat gavra. If it was chovat talit, then any shirt that you would have sitting in a drawer that has those four corners, you would have to put tzitzit on them, even if you never wore them. Nihi dechayve rachmana ki michsei talit debachiyuva ki michsei talit de la bachiyuva mechayve rachmanan. So if you look in Rashi, it says orayu tzitzit chayve rachmana la gavra la duri batar till you have to go out of your way, la dure batar talit dechiyuva lachsuyi ba michayve. He says, do I have to do that? Right? Do I have to really go out of my way to get a piece of clothing? If it's chovat gavra, then I shouldn't have to do that. So he says, Elahachi kamar le titztiki lemiftar nafshach min tzitzit. So the angel basically says to him, you know, that what he's upset about him, and Rashi says he's trying to tachbulot, okay? He's trying to figure out a way to get out of it. Tachbulot is trickery, okay? Liftorat mecha mitzitzi. Tisiki tachbulot v'chaviro b'avakama kol tisiki di'itle l'me'ever avda. So the angel's basically saying it's not appropriate to have an approach to mitzvot where you're always trying to figure out ways to get out of something as opposed to figuring out ways to get into something. So I would say, you know, we see from this piece and from, I think, the Gemara Brachot, there's a laxity that developed among, you know, people. And even Chazal, we're struggling with, like, how do we react? And what are we supposed to do? So in this case, we're going to go out and say, okay, we're going to we can't change the rules. The rules are the rules. The Torah says, "Urita motel." So we can't change the fact that there's a certain standard of garb, of clothing, that requires tzitzit, and a certain that does not. We can't change those rules. But we could create inspiration and encouragement and give people a reason to believe this is a worthwhile thing to bring your produce through the door and to go out and again, if we think about it today, the whole mitzvah tzitzit has really turned into that. The whole mitzvah tzitzit, you're not going to, unless you have your, what's his name from Israel? Rabbi Ben Nun.
Right.
Is it Rabbi Ben Nun?
Yeah.
He wears tzitzit on his suit.
Yeah.
Right?
I thought you meant someone else, but yeah.
Somebody else does that as well?
No, there's the guy who wears every sheet of tzitzit.
Oh, he's not alive anymore. Scheinberg.
That's the way, yeah.
Oh, he's
yeah.
multiple layers.
Yeah, yeah, Scheinberg. Yeah. Yeah, another good example of that concept. There's a whole story behind that.
Yeah, I know. He made an editor that his wife...
Something
better,
happened,
like,
yeah.
If she gets better, then I'll wear everything.
It was something that he took on. Yeah, yeah, something he took on.
Is there a constant question with this, though? Like, then what about, like, Gerushin? Like, that's also a mitzvah. Like,
right. Right, so that would be...
How do you determine when you're going to actually, like...
I mean, tons of stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's like a classic question. But,
so, I think we call that category mitzvah matir.
Oh, okay.
So, mitzvah... What else is...
doing chalitza.
Okay.
Right.
Or yibum, for that
right.
matter.
Right. Circumstantial. Right. And...
All of mitzvah kumuna, you could say...
Yeah, there's an Or HaChaim, there's a very nice Or HaChaim on, I think it's on the Aseret HaDibrot, where he speaks about how the Tarayag Mitzvot were given to Klal Yisrael to fulfill. They weren't given to the individuals, because no individual could do all 613.
Oh.
No one individual in the nation could, you know, because we know why. We don't have to explain that part, but... That, you know, as a collective, we're being, you know, tasked with being able to fulfill. So it's a way to think about that as well. Okay, let's look at one or two others. So I have a very nice article, which I'm happy to send you, written by one of my rabbinic friends, Rabbi Kenny Shaiwitz, who's an educator in New York. He wrote a whole essay on loopholes. So he has a nice formulation. I didn't put it in here, but he talks about kind of a way to think about this. He says like this: despite the clear disdain for such mitzvah avoidance, the application of Torah law to the modern world often forces our leaders to deal with competing values and precepts. At times, the reality of the times leave us unable to fulfill all our goals, so we're forced to prioritize and choose which to fulfill. In this process, we utilize loopholes, avoiding one obligation in pursuit of another. So I didn't bring this here, but there's basically two categories that the Rambam speaks about. So these loopholes, however, are not randomly or subjectively employed. The Rambam describes permissible loopholes as harama, and forbidden ones as mirma. So the words are very closely related, but they obviously mean different things. And in order to introduce such innovations, our leaders must justify the ends and the means. So the ends refers to the purpose for which we're seeking the loophole, and so the ends generally is more pressing, is the more pressing Torah commandment or the mitzvah or the value, but the means too has to also be justified. So Chazal are going to be limited by objective guidelines. If something is a Torah mitzvah, we're going to talk about prosbol now, you can't just say, you know, we fell in hard times and people aren't giving out loans anymore, so we're going to...
Is there something to be said for the difference between these earlier cases in which loopholes are built into the actual...
It's a takana.
Into the actual mitzvah, as opposed to some sort of eight lasot l'ashem, like you have by prisbel, where, like, by tzitzis,
you know, you actually aren't chayiv. It's built in. There's no shita that you are. It's just like, you know, you're getting around doing, like, you could do it, and you're choosing not to in a unquestionably legitimate, if somewhat devious way. As opposed to, you know, Eilas HaLashem, like, you know, we have to find a way out of this halacha.
That's like, it's very interesting.
Like, I think that's
it's a great point. It's a great point. I think I have another thing here we'll look at in a minute from Rav Kook, from Shabbat Haaretz, where he speaks a little bit about what was going on with his thinking about the Heter Mechira. And that might touch on that a little bit, but it is, it's an interesting, there's some other hagdarot in terms of ase and lotase, so I think that's another good one to bring up, in terms of things that are built in versus things that were
actively seeking.
Yeah, right, imposed also, upon.
Kozbul has a whole, like, do we have takanot anymore where we do stuff like that? Like, it's a whole other higher level doing it, isn't it? Like, with Sanhedrin and everything.
Right, I mean, an example would be going in the other direction. Maybe an example would be like blowing shofar on Shabbat.
Right.
Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, you could say the other ones, you know, freeing agunas, like Rav Elchanan Wasserman.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or being mafkia kiddushin.
Right.
Going the other direction. Yeah. Which is the same, but
right.
Doing it.
Sometimes.
Yeah, you sometimes. Be mafkia exactly. Kiddushin.
It's right. 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 You can almost never do it.
Right. So a very well-known example of harama is the pros ball. So you have the psukim in Chumash, in source 4. And essentially, we want to build a society where people are lending, people are helping each other, and Shemitah creates certain challenges to this effect. So I just brought the English here. So just read through the Gemara, familiar with it. It's Gemara Masechet Gittin, source 5. The Mishnah taught that Hillel instituted a document that prevents Shemitah year from abrogating an outstanding debt. So we learned in a Mishnah there, this is in Masechet Shvit, if one writes a prose bow, the Shemitah year does not cancel the debt. This is one of the matters that Hillel instituted, and essentially this works using a hefker, a beitin concept. The beitin kind of takes over the loan and allows it to continue its effect after the Shemitah begins, which sets in.
There's a clear Talmud mitzvah thing here also.
In terms of?
That Hillel knows what the purpose
right.
Of Shemitah was.
Right.
And that's why he can completely flip it.
Right.
But
right.
I guess it's a good question, like, when do you actually know?
That right. So, yeah, go ahead.
No, just Hefker Beitin. Hefker is, like, really fun. Like, you can solve anything.
Yeah.
even right. if it wasn't, like, if the legal approach
right.
is so far-reaching that even right. if the Talmud right. wasn't there, you could still say, you know, right. it was yeah. Hefker, like, whatever. Right. Like,
yeah.
Such a fun.
Sure, let's just think, throw it out
no,
there.
No, but really, like.
Yeah. So, fine. So, he talks about that, and then you turn the page. Right? It says in the Torah, beware, not be a base thought in your heart. Seventh year, your release at hand, your eye be evil against your needy brother, and give him nothing. So, he rose into the prose bowl, said it would also be possible to collect those debts in order to ensure that people would continue to give loans. This is the essence of the text of the prose bowl in the fourth line. I transfer to you so-and-so the judges who are in such and such a place so that I will collect any debt that I am owed by so-and-so whenever I wish, as the court now has the right to collect the debts. And the judges and witnesses sign below, and that's the document. The creditor will then be able to collect the debt on behalf of the court, and the court can give it to him. So that's kind of the mechanics of it. And then the Gemara asks, how do you do this? How does Hillel do such a thing? The Torah says Shemitah cancels the loans. Hillel comes along and says it doesn't. So Baye says, and I brought the sources on the backside, we'll look at them in a second, the Brit is referring to the Shemitah Bizman Hazeh, which, according to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, is only Midrabanan. And this is connected to the existence of Yovel. So if you just turn to the back for a second, I brought the Tosfot, there's a Tosfot in this Gemara, and the discussion about Yovel and the Rambam. We don't have to go through every source, but the main source here is in Masechet Erchin, which speaks about this connection between, there's kind of two things at play. One is there's two Shemitahs, right? The Shemitah of Ksafim, and the Shemitah of the Karkaot. And these are interlinked. The Rambam spells that out. Also mentions it as well in source 8. And the Gemara in Masechet Erchin essentially says that after the Galut, after the exile of Shevet Reuven, Shevet Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, the Yovlot were abolished or at least suspended.
So you wouldn't be able to do it with the Doraita specifically because it's Rabbanan that you can have.
Correct. And that is one of Rav Kook's main, I mean, not just Rav Kook, but people who before him as well, that was one of the main forces behind the Heter Mechira concept.
Yovel helps out with like so many
yes.
complicated things.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is... if you talk about Rov, so if you look at the rest of the Gemara in Source 9, Kratem Dror Ba'aretz Kol Yoshev Bizman Shekol Yoshveh Alav Lo Zman Shegalo Mitzatan Yachol Hayu Alav V'Heim Ravin Sheva Binyamin B'Yuda V'Sheva Yuda B'Yamin Yehi Yovel Noheg Talmud Lomar L'Kol Yoshveh Bizman Shoshveh Kitzikunem V'Lo Zman Shem Ravin. So what's the call? Is the call Rov? Is it a majority? What's a majority? So theoretically, if more Jews were living in Israel today, which might be the case,
then we'd have to kick out all the non-Jews. It's so complicated.
You know, it's an interesting question.
That's why
and it's very complicated because it's very complicated because how do we calculate Yovel today?
Yeah.
Which I don't think is such an easy thing to do.
If
it's batel, then does that mean you have to bring it back when the times change, or does it mean it's done forever?
I think so. I would think so. It's partial in the Torah. We're not gonna right. I'm not sure if the Rambam says it in the ones that I brought here.
Ancient. No, he does say you're supposed to bring it back.
He says it here.
No, I just remember learning.
I'm saying I don't think I brought that halacha here. I'm not coming to mention Tamashmi Karka, Tamashmi Ksafim, Homagami Arizona, Kotarz, Vasanshin, Ena Tamashmi Ksafim, Shvita, Filabaretz. Okay. Sanchi Yovel no Hague, and then he brings it specifically, Source 10, Source 11, that these two things are interlinked. So if one, you know, if we're not doing one, if we're not practicing one in its original, what was it?
The Svelim was quoted in Shira in the summer, because the Gyor Tosha stuff.
What was the connection to Ger Toshev?
Here, he has it here, that we you can only
the common Ger Toshev. Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
So there's Mafloket in the Nosekei,
about
whether it be
Mekom Ger Toshev. Right. Mekom Ger Toshev, Mekom Ger Toshev, okay, so I want to just, for a second, break from this. We'll come back to Mechira Chametz in like 3 minutes. And I brought some other copies, which I decided in the end to share with you. This is from someone made up... an introduction. Someone made a translation of the introduction of Shabbat Haaretz, which is Rav Kook, the book that Rav Kook wrote to defend or explain his position on the Heter Mechira, which I believe was in 1904, the year that he came to Israel, or the year after he came was around that time. And he says a few things. So this, the first page you're looking at is actually from the chapters itself, and then the rest of it is from the Hakdama. So let's just look at this together. So first he writes this translation, the sabbatical dispensation by a permit of sale on which we rely was never used and does not appear to have been relied upon by the early sages of blessed memory at the time of the Second Temple. In all the days of the sages of Jerusalem Talmud, nor when the population continued to live in the land of Israel afterward. This is not surprising. In the earlier generations, the need was not so pressing. Whenever there was no pressing need, the sages did not want to publicize dispensations based on legal fiction, following the maxim, it is the glory of the Lord to conceal matters. So that statement in and of itself just gives you a little bit of insight into somewhat of a working kind of methodology of when we would use or when we would institute a harama.
What is that pasuk in Hebrew? Like, is it like a, would I know it? It's Mishlei, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah. In the early days, when Jews lived primarily by working the land for sustenance, it was possible to do the sanctity of the Shemitah according to the details of the law without any dispensation. But in our days, when the existence of the community depends on commerce and the produce and crops of the agricultural settlements, the effect of preventing commerce would also lead to the destruction of future stability. Under these circumstances, certainly our obligation to introduce a dispensation by way of sale of the land. Okay, so let me just go through some of the lines here. We can read the Hebrew. And the translation's on the right. He says some important ideas, which I think kind of give a little bit more foundation to what we're speaking about. So first he says, on the left side, V'hine ata higia shnatav shmita lefi minyan hashanim amuchzak itanu. Okay, so shmita has arrived, according to our calculation. Merov dalut matzav yishuvenu ba'aretz hechreach hu omnam lehistapek al pi rov behorat sha'a. Okay, so these are important words here. Bad situation. We have to use a horacha, temporary, you know, decision. Kasher huskam me'az al pik doli ador. I'm not the first one to have suggested this. There's great people before me. Asher nichnasu l'toch omek matzav yeshiva chadash ve'artzeinu k'dosha uvargasha ne'mana chadru al erkob ba'atid. They understood deeply the situation, new settlement in the land. So on and so forth. Okay, they saw what was going on. They understood. We need to be dealing with this situation right now of developing the land. This is a significant time in history. And Petach Tikva, Tzmicha Keren Yeshua, Shigdolai Chavatin LeYasher Mesilata, so on and so forth. Then he says, Ve'ena Kadosh Baruch Hu Babi Trunya and Briotav. Which is the reference from the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, which talks about where Hashem put the mountain over the heads, and then it says, and that's a nice connection to Purim, right? It says over there that they were forced into accepting the Torah, and they have this Moda Rabba Lo Raita. They could basically have an excuse after that you know we were forced into it. Until Hadar Kiblu Abimei Achashverosh. In the days of Achashverosh, that was more of a willful acceptance. Okay, we're not going into that Gemara right now, but over there, that's where it brings this phrase, Babitrunyam Briotav. Hashem's not going to do things. It's in other places in Shas as well. And basically circumstances are giving us the ability to do this. So almost like a Hillel-esque type of language or type of logic here. And he uses, again, the idea of the Rabbanan. Turn the page. This part's important, which I think is, what Rav Kook really wanted people to understand is he's not giving this dispensation even for the next Shemitah. Like, this was literally that time. We'll see what happens, 7 years away, a lot could happen. And he says in the second paragraph on that page, his hope was that people, just by giving the heter, this was kind of how he thought about it, by giving this dispensation, we're actually going to raise more awareness about Hilchot Shemitah. And people will become more understanding, more knowledgeable, more, more fluent in the halachot, and there will be more enthusiasm around Shemitah, and people will start to, the ultimate goal is to get back to a place where we get back to the ideal, because we do need a Shemitah. We do, he talks about how what Shabbat is to the individual, Shemitah is to the nation. That's a nationalistic idea that Rav Kook speaks about strongly in the Sefer and in many of his writings, as we know. And then he goes on to kind of conclude that idea. Okay, so let's just wrap up, and we'll talk about Mechir HaChametz for a minute. So what's behind Mechir HaChametz? So what seems to be behind Mechir HaChametz could be one of two things. So we have two issues at play. We have a Isser of Bal Yira Bal Yimatzei, which is Lo Yimatzei V'Vateichem, or Lo Yimatzei V'Vateichem. And then we have a positive mitzvah of Tashbitu, right, to actively get rid of the chametz. So, how does mechir chametz work within those two ideas or mitzvot that we have to consider? So, this gets back to what we said at the beginning, the hagdara of aseh and lo taseh. So, one way you could look at this is don't even look at the aseh lo taseh issue. Just look at the fact that we're dealing with. A lot of chametz, this whole idea of mechir chametz was really meant to be, this was a Soloveitchik's position, only on rabbinic type of chametz. Chametz, that's midrabanan, where the grain product is not an essential ingredient, but in fact, if you had actual bread, you really wouldn't be able to incorporate that into the mechira, which is much more of a perspective of it's not really a loophole, like it's not a Torah loophole, we're only using the Durabanan that we've been talking about by Shemitah and by Heter Mechira and etc.
And I don't know a lot about Mechira comments, but the way they do it is right, Mibateichem, right? Tashbitu sar Mibateichem, or Mitzvah Bateichem, and then you sell the room, so it's not Batecha.
Right.
So, I mean, for all the, like, whatever Mechira comments is a joke, like, it's like, as far as loopholes go, like, it's a relatively solid one, I think.
Yeah, like, I mean, it has to be that way in order for it to work, right?
But like,
yes, agreed.
There shouldn't be 100%. A reason that it should be. It
completely
needs to be
agree.
Not, not,
right, what I would say about it, and this is kind of the second point, is right. We have these two categories of mitzvot. So if we think about, and this is how my friend Rabbi Shaiwitz presented it, he said, think about the asei mitzvot as the mitzvot generally that when we're trying to actively do something, we're trying to actively have a relationship. So those are the mitzvot that encourage ahavat Hashem. And the mitzvot lo tasei generally are the mitzvot that we are trying to be refrain from, or either actively, but a lot of time passively by not doing something, are the mitzvot that are more oriented toward Yirat Hashem. Okay, this is a concept that's spoken out by a lot of different places and different writings. And with that in mind, even so, you could have something, for example, that's a passive mitzvah asay, for example, not eating on Yom Kippur, right? So, but there, the reason why you're doing it is it's orienting you toward Avad Hashem. It's not orienting toward...
Why is that a mitzvah asay?
It's vi'initem. Vi'initem, right?
Yeah.
Right? The language of the Torah is. So that's why, you know, just think about that. That makes a lot of sense why Rav Kitina was criticized by the angel. Because he was actively, you know, removing an opportunity to be involved in something that would lead him to toward more Avad Hashem. So it's less important, this is the language he used, so it's less important how you avoid the lota say, as long as you don't, you know, anger Hashem. So if you avoid the lota say by selling your chametz, so you've avoided the lota say. You could either destroy it or you could sell it. If you sell it, you've also avoided the lota say. And you know, the actual sale, the mechanism of the sale, they use every type of kinyan, and it's very it's a very solid transaction. With someone with business knowledge, etc. So when it comes to Bichar Chametz, what do? We still have a ceremony of Bidika and Bior Chametz. We leave a bagel, we leave a piece of bread, and we do it again. It's ceremonial, but it's meaningful in the fact that we're not getting rid of every single, we're not selling every single last bit of our Chametz, because we still want to accomplish the essay of Tashbitu. So we still try to hold on to the opportunity to do mitzvah asay. And if you take the more kind of stringent opinion on it, then to get rid of your actual, get rid of meaning eat, your chametz before Pesach, and then only sell away the stuff that's less official chametz, or deraita chametz. That would be another way to think about this. So these are some of my thoughts on this topic. I brought at the end just a piece from an article from Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, who has a very nice article, a little bit of a longer piece. I brought it in. He quotes this concept that I mentioned at the beginning from the Rambam, Harama and Mirma, and then he writes, we'll just finish with this last paragraph, and he says, before approaching the subject, let us note the term harama refers to two different halachic situations. The first type is a case of halachic circumvention, the legal validity of which is beyond doubt, so that he employs in circumvention is exempt from the halachic obligation. The only question that arises is that of a religious and moral legitimacy of utilizing the circumvention. So that category includes harama like the one in Masech HaBrachot, or the sale of the Bechor, which we didn't mention here. And the other type of harama includes acting in a certain way, so different than usual, which would maybe be a way, I think you were the one that brought that up, that would be a way of kind of categorizing it, causing the action to be permitted. In other words, it's not the act itself, the result that's forbidden, but it's a specific way of doing it. So, what was that?
Sounds like she knew it.
Yeah, yeah. Common denominator between these two categories is the use of a certain stratagem to permit an act as otherwise forbidden. For this reason, they're both designated as harama, even though we're dealing with two different phenomena. Okay. So, lots of different things to think about, but ultimately, I walk away when I think about this and I say, I think a lot of it is about the kavana. I think it comes down to why it is that we're trying to do something, and I think the...
I think that also is a reason that people find some instances more troubling than others, and that gets back to the Tamei HaMitzvot thing,
right.
Where, like, Prusbul is, you know, very understandable. We want to preserve the intent and the Kavanah of what the Torah wanted, but something like, you know, Heter Mechira, or even maybe Heter Iska, it's harder to say that.
Right. Right.
Because we're not, like, we're you know, it's pretty clear that, you know, the land should rest.
Right, and the language of Shad Adchak is even used in a very...
Right. So, I mean, I don't know anything about Heter Iska, but, like, I assume that it's...
Yeah, it uses a similar kind
right.
of framework of how we look yeah. at these things. Okay, questions, comments?
Can you send the article to
the... Yeah. Yes, I will.